Okay, well, it's the 7th of April 2011, and I'm with Anne White. My name's Christine Schimmel, and we're at Anne White's house on 7 Robert Road in Sheffield. And we're looking out of her dining room window onto some beautiful daffodils at the moment. It's really lovely. So would you like to introduce yourself, Anne?
Yes. My name's Anne White. I was born in 1941 in the chemical yard at Totley. My maiden name was Russell. My parents were Albert Edward Russell, and my mum was Annie Barber. I believe there are quite a lot of Barbers in Totley still at the moment. I had an older brother, Kenneth, who was born in 1927. A sister, Audrey, who was born in 1936. And as I say, I was born in 1941.
And where were your parents born? Where did they live before
that? I believe that they all lived in the Totley area. I've done some recent family history research, and I am finding out that grandparents and great-grandparents lived all over Derbyshire, Castleton, Hathersage. So I've always felt comfortable in this part of the country. It really is home. My mum and dad, because they died when I was so young, I only have a short history of them, really. My mum came from quite a big family. Her parents had had 5 children, and then her mother died, and her father married again. He married Ada Barber. Well, Ada Whitford, as she was then, and she became Barber. And immediately they then started having children. So I've got a lot of half-uncles and half-aunties who all scattered all over. There was only my Uncle Tom, who stayed living at number 3. With my step-grand.
This is the chemical yard's number 3.
This is chemical. Well, I've numbered them on here, although the houses themselves weren't numbered. But I thought, how can I describe them from my map without giving them a number? But they weren't numbered.
So let me just say that we're sitting in front of a map that Anne has drawn of her childhood environment. So which is the chemical yard?
Yes.
And it's quite detailed, and it'll be available with the recording. But it's a reminder for you, isn't it?
Yes.
Of your childhood.
And, oh, very much.
And
so.
The cottages are numbered 1, 2, 3. And so your Uncle Tom lived in number 3, isn't it?
Well, as I've named it, number 3. But as I say, they weren't actually numbered. But our cottage had a name. It was called Northwest Cottage. It's not a very pretty name, but presumably it faced northwest. In the first house, when I was first able to recall anything, was a family called the Gutzers, Mr. and Mrs. Gutzer, who had a son called Joseph. They moved out, and Mr. and Mrs. Hanwell moved in with their sons Clive and David, and I became very good friends with David, who was just a couple of years older than me. They'd lived at Healy, and they didn't like the countryside at all when they first came. But he learnt to love it like I did, because I took him all over Totley. We had freedom in those days. Parents didn't need to take us out. We just went out to play. And we came back when we knew it was a meal time. We didn't have a watch, so I don't know how we knew it was meal time.
You probably got hungry.
Probably so, or just an instinct. And I wandered all round Totley, but I can't remember many of the names of roads, because I never took much notice of the roads, you know.
This cottage here, the one that where the Gutzers live, now that's the one that's still standing, isn't it?
It is, right. It is. And the others were all, well, the council said that they were being built too near the river, which is surprising, because there's some houses now here on Laverdean Avenue which are right next to the river. But when we were flooded in 1958, it was a freak flood, but every house was flooded, and we were stood much further back from the river.
Oh, your cottage was right at
the... That was our cottage there, which we'd got a long front garden.
So you were flooded as well?
Oh, yes, very badly. And the worst thing about the flooding was all the mud. We couldn't get rid of the smell for weeks afterwards. The council supplied us with huge bottles of disinfectant and things, but the mud still stayed. And all our belongings that had been downstairs were all totally ruined.
And what happened to the land? Because you've got a garden here, you've got...
Yes, we, out of the whole, all the houses in the chemical yard, we had a lot more land than anybody else. Because we had a long front garden, we had a big side garden, we kept animals, we kept pigs, we kept hens, we had one or two ducks, we had lots of pets. As far as I can remember, we always had dogs and cats and rabbits. And then my dad built a little bridge, only a little wooden bridge, nothing much, just enough to get from our side of the river to the opposite side, where he rented some land from Colin Thompson, the butcher. And that's where he grew all his vegetables, where my dad grew all his vegetables. And he had his pigsty. And then we had some more land up to a boundary, which we didn't really use that land for much. I think the pigs roamed around on that land. Next to the pigsty was the most beautiful rhubarb. The rhubarb that grew there was wonderful. It was so tasty. In actual fact, it was growing on the part where we... when we'd cleaned the pigs out, you know, it was all lots of being cleaned out of the pigs. It certainly wasn't. It was the sweetest rhubarb. We used, as children, especially with the Nicholson family who lived in number two to begin with, we would get little brown paper bags and put some sugar in. And we chopped the rhubarb off. We did wash it. but it was very... The small, slender ones were good. And we used that as our sweets. You know, we would dip the rhubarb into the sugar. It was beautiful. Yeah. So at number two lived the Nicholson family. Now, they had a lot of children. I can't quite remember how many. Because
how big were these cottages?
They were only small. They were only small. Very small. When you went in the front door, you were straight into the front room, and that was all there was, a front room. Then there was a little kitchen at the back, and these houses here, number 1, 2, 3 and 4, the river ran at the back of those, so they didn't have a back door. And then there was just a staircase, and upstairs there were two very small bedrooms. There was no such thing as a bathroom or a... You got washed at the kitchen sink. They didn't have any choice. And the toilets were separate buildings further down in the chemical yard. I'm not sure how many toilets there were, but I think because we shared our toilet with the Stanway family, I think it stands to reason that the other four houses shared one toilet between two of them. But
the Stanways live next door to
the
you.
Stanway family lived next door to us, Mr. and Mrs. Stanway. And you know, everybody in those days, it was just after the war, and everybody helped each other. And the Stanway family were very good to us because my mum was often poorly. And so Mrs. Stanway, it kept an eye on her really. And in our front room, we were luckier because we did have a room and a kitchen which was bigger than the others. But we were only a two-bedroomed house. But we had a little alcove in the corner of the front room. And if ever my mum was feeling dizzy or not very well, she would knock on the wall and it was a signal, and Mrs. Stanway would come running round, you know, to see if she needed any help. And we did all help each other. The Nicholson girls that I played with, who were just a fortnight younger than me, but they were twins, so they were small. And they used to have all my cast-off clothing. Clothing was handed around because I think, well, I still remember a ration book for clothing. I can remember my mum, you know, really taking care of these ration books, because so any clothing that you had, well, we were the original people to recycle. It was passed from child to child. It had to be.
So what were the Nicholson twins? What was their name?
The Nicholson twins were called Pamela and Mary. I think they had a brother called Albert. And then they had twin brothers who were younger than them. And one of those twins, I think they were called Colin and Edward. But I wouldn't be definite about that. But they started school not long after I started with Pamela and Mary. And I was coming home on the bus one day with Pamela and Mary. We got off the bus on Totley Rise. And there was a lady there who walked up to the twins and said, "I want you to come home with me." And she lived on Totley Rise, but I can't remember her name. And I thought, why are they going to her house? Why are they not coming home with me? And when I got home, we found out that their younger brother, the two younger brothers, had come home from school on the bus. They'd managed to cross over the main road, but as they were coming over Glover Road, one of them had run straight into the path of a car and had been killed. At the time, my brother Ken was working as a delivery boy at Grattan's, and he heard the crash and he came out, and he was the first one to get to the little boy, but he died straight away. So I think that was probably the first time I ever sort of knew about death and anybody dying. Mm. And I remember that the Nicholson family, who with having such a big family, they didn't have a lot of food, and yet I remember seeing the door to their house open, and this table was laden down with the most beautiful salad. You know, it was a really lovely meal, and that was for the little boy's funeral. And the other little boy, he was delightful, and he used, when he went to the toilet, he used to sit with the door open. And I mean, I've heard people say in those days, if they couldn't fasten the toilet door properly, they used to whistle or sing so that somebody knew that who were in the toilet. But he just used to sing anyway. Wherever he went, he used to sing. So he'd be sat on the toilet with the door wide open, singing away, you know. I don't think we had much pride in those days, really.
It sounds as if it was a very close-knit community.
It was.
That you were very much
in very the chemical much yard. So. Mm. In the chemical yard, very much so. But then we did have friends around as well. Mm.
Remember who was at three
and in
four?
Number three lived my step grand Ada Barber with my uncle Tom, who was the only one of her children who was still at home. The others had married and moved away. He wasn't her youngest son, but he lived with her until she died. I think she died in 1963 when my grand died. She did experience the flooding, which devastated her, because she was a very, very house proud lady. She was always working, and she worked as a cleaner at Grattan's. And she was renowned for, you know, getting down on her hands and knees and scrubbing a floor. A very small, sort of fragile looking lady, but she was very wiry, she was very strong, and she had definite opinions about things. She didn't argue with my gran. But after my parents died, she would always cook me a lovely evening meal when I got home from work. So I started working when I was 15. And she would have a meal ready for me. I can never, ever remember her giving me a hug. But I knew that she loved me because she fed me so well. And she'd put the meal down on the table and she'd say, "Get that down, you lass, and you'll not come to any harm." And she was right, she did look out. I knew that she loved me, but she never physically showed it. She wasn't that sort of person. Mm. And then in number four, originally lived Mr. Thompson, a very elderly gentleman, and he didn't have electricity in his house. And he would sit in front of the window. There was a square table, And he would sit and he used to have a candle at night time. And he'd have the candle lit. And he just used to look out of the window. So if you were walking past, it was quite scary. For a child, anyway, you know, because the candle would throw shadows on his face. And, you know, it was a bit creepy, really.
So was he a scary man, or was it just a situation?
No, it was just, I think he was a very nice man, but I didn't really get to know him very well. Mm. Other than that, this is the other way that we were all helping each other, because sometimes during the day, if I was playing out in the chemical yard, he'd tap on his window and he'd shout me to his house, and he'd ask me to go on an errand to the shops for him, maybe fetch some bread, some milk, I'm not sure quite what I fetched for him, and he'd give me some money. And that's how we all were. Anybody would ask somebody's children, you know, to go and fetch some shopping for them, or if they were doing a job, they'd say, you know, come give us a hand, come and help. And people did. I mean, the Stanway family, you know, if my dad was doing some work on our property or something, Mr. Stanway was usually with him. You know, they worked as teams, and everybody helped everybody else out. And mostly for our pigs, people who lived on Laverdean Avenue, if they were going along the back lane towards the shops or anything, they didn't need to because their gardens went up to Glossop Road.
Mm.
Glover Road. But if they came along the back lane where the wall was, where my dad grew vegetables, they would put all their bread that had gone mouldy or whatever, all for the pigs. So when we had a pig slaughtered, my dad would have a list of people that he would give pork to. One man, I remember, Mr. Cooper, on Laverdean Avenue, his delicacy was the pig's trotters. He always got, and I used to think, well, he's welcome to those because I don't want to eat those. But he loved his pig's trotters, and they were first on the list. That's what he got for helping us, you know.
Yes.
So, and Mrs. White, no relation to me, by the way, but Mrs. White, who lived on Laverdean Avenue, who had a son called Norman, who went on to be a solicitor, and a daughter called Valerie. And Mrs. White was a very good tailoress, and she used to make my coats and things, you know. So I don't know quite how it worked, but our cottage was like a magnet to people. Everybody knew my mum, and my mum would help anybody. We sold cigarettes and sweets. So people would come, and my mum had a little book. If they hadn't got enough money, she wouldn't see them go without. She put it in a little book. And I don't think she was a bookkeeper, so I think often she forgot to ask them for the money, or she didn't like. But we would have somebody come on a Saturday night and say, oh, I'm desperate for a cigarette. Can I have 5 cigarettes till the weekend? You know, this was a Saturday night, but my mum would, she'd open up a packet of 10 and she'd give them 5. And they paid us the following weekend, you know. She was always, anybody who'd got any problems, they all came. I mean, from Laverdean Avenue, Mrs. Cooper, Mrs. White, they came to our house. All the neighbours came to our house. The Pashleys, who lived at number 4 eventually, after Mr. Thompson died, Jean Pashley and her husband Reg, they came to live there, and they went on to have 2 children, Richard and Diane. Well, Diane was the eldest, and then Richard. And my mum, you know, she was the sort of person that somebody like Mrs. Pashley would go and ask about, you know, looking after her children, what to do and things. And my mum would help. She didn't interfere, but people knew that they could ask her for help.
Mm.
And vice versa, then Mrs. Pashley, when my mum had a cerebral hemorrhage, which was on a Christmas Eve, I remember running round, I was 11 years old, And I didn't know what was happening to my mum. I don't want this to sound as if I'm dwelling on miserable things, because I'm not, because I had the most wonderful childhood. But this was a sad time, and I ran round, knocked on Mrs. Pashley's door, and she came straight round to our house and phoned the doctor from our house. We did have a telephone. That's the other thing. We were always the first people to have some modern technology. For her generation, my mum was very forward-thinking. So we were the first people to get a telephone, a washing machine, a television for the Queen's coronation. And when it was the Queen's coronation, everybody in the chemical yard came into our little front room. And we sat wherever we could. And I can remember sitting on the lid of the piano. We put it down over the key. And I sat there to watch the Queen's coronation. And my mum was making cups of tea and biscuits and cakes all day long. Because people came and went, because it lasted a full day, you know.
So were the children watching as well? I mean, the whole community was there watching.
Everybody kept coming in, watching a bit, going away again, doing something else. But coming in, our house was just a hive of activity, as it always was. I mean, not just in the chemical yard, but far and wide.
So now we're looking
on Mickley Lane, where there were some houses on Mickley Lane, which sort of...
It's right by the river.
They bridged the river, yeah.
They actually bridged the river.
I'm sure that they did. There was a lady there, I think... I've drawn three there, but I have been told that there were four houses there. But there was a lady called Mrs. Kendrick who lived there, and she would come down and visit my mum. And people would come, any problems that they'd got. My mum was a shoulder to cry on, and she would help in whatever way she could. And then we also had the Salt family who lived at Woodthorpe Farm, opposite Woodthorpe Hall. Eddie Salt was... Oh, my mum idolised Eddie Salt. And he used to come regularly. When he'd finished his day's work, he would come down to our house.
How old was he at that time?
He was a good friend of my brother. I think he was slightly younger. But he was probably born... between my brother being born and my sister being born. So he was probably born, I don't know, 1933, something like that. And he was a really good friend. And his sisters. I remember my mum telling a story about Mr. Salt, who was quite a disciplinarian. And in those days, children on farms had to work. They always had to work. And his two daughters... I think one was called Fanny. Not sure of the other. Might have been Dorothy. They worked really hard on the farm, and this particular night they went out to a dance, and the father had said to them what time they'd got to be home at, and they were late getting home, and when they got home they found that the door was locked. So they walked all the way from the farm to our house, knocked on the door, knocked my mum up and said, "We either have to sleep in a ditch somewhere or can we stay at your house?" And she said, "Oh, of course, you know, come on in."
So they had to walk right from Woodthorpe Hall down the dark pathway.
Oh, yes, and they must have already walked up there.
Yes,
but they walked back again and spent the night at our house. And that's what it was like. My mum threw parties. You know, she was a good cook. Christmas cakes were absolutely wonderful. And she would feed anybody, you know. She would just say, "Come on in." Actually, Marcroft's at the builder's yard. Now, there were two girls working there. I can't remember the names, I'm afraid. And this was when I was about 11 or 12 years old. Bearing in mind that my mum had a lot of illness and wasn't ever really a well person, but she worked hard. When she was at home, she looked after the animals and helped my dad out with the livestock and things. But the two girls who worked at Marcroft's they would come to our house to buy sweets and chocolate. And one day when they were at our house, they said to my mum, it's not very nice when we have lunch. There's nowhere to sit. We have to sit in the office. And it's like, oh, she said, well, come here then. I'll put the kettle on and make a cup of tea. You'll bring your sandwiches. So every lunchtime, they came and had the lunch at our house. And that's the sort of person that she was. I love it very much. Delightful.
Yes, she was.
Yes, I don't think she ever said or did a bad deed in her life. Whether I'm looking back with rose-coloured glasses, I don't know, but that was my mum as I remember her.
So it's a very enclosed and supportive little community, isn't
yes.
it? You've got a dressmaker, you've got people, you've got your dad growing the pig, you've got your mum there. You know, it's the whole community.
Yes, it was. It was. Yeah. That was the sort of centre of my life. But as I say, I did wander
yes.
all over.
Yes.
Jennifer, who lived just behind us, Jennifer Shaw, she was a very good friend. So many people that we knew, but that was the main core of our existence, really.
Yes,
there.
Yes. So, was there a way from to get from Queen Victoria down to the Chemical Yard, or did you have
not officially?
Oh, right,
not officially. But
it's quite steep at that point.
It's
isn't it?
Very steep, and it used to get very slippy. But most people, including Jennifer and the Riddlesworth family and the Howarth family, would take a shortcut. Sometimes my dad would get annoyed because the Howarth boys in particular, they'd hop over the wall from the back lane, come across our bridge, our bridge, nip round our garden, up the hill, and to their house. But when you think about it, it saved a huge triangle of a walk. It's, you know, why do that? Except it was very slippy up the bank side. There was not a proper path or anything.
Mm.
And Jennifer, I can remember looking out of our kitchen window and I could just see her legs as she walked along the bank side to her house and the Riddlesworth family. Because the bank just there was very steep. Jennifer, she got in touch with me a few years ago and we had some correspondence between us, very, very good memories, both of us, about how things were. And Jennifer says that she can remember when our cottage was flooded, that they were trying to throw candles down to us because we hadn't got any electricity. So they were throwing them down to us at the bottom there. The wood here, my dad would send us out into this wood. I don't know who that belonged to. At the end of our garden.
Yes.
But obviously we could still walk straight into it. But we did observe the boundaries. We knew boundaries really.
Mm.
But we...
so that would be
it was
where,
private.
Would that be in the water meadow area now that's been...
I think this is the water meadow this side.
Yeah, so it's
I'm not sure if
river.
That's... Yes. And that wood there, I love that wood because the first flowers to grow there in the springtime were the little wood anemones. And I've always been mad about flowers. I love flowers, as you can see.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go and pick wood anemones. But my dad used to send us into there with some little metal buckets. And we used to dig up the soil, which was all leaf mould, really. I mean, you'd pay a fortune for it in a garden centre nowadays. But you had to make use of whatever commodities there were, really. I can't ever remember garden centres in those days. We would go and collect the leaf mould and he'd put it on his vegetables. And
so did your dad make his living from
no.
his land?
Oh, no. No, far from it. He worked for 31 years at Pickford and Holland at Ullabar. And again, the businesses around there, Pickford Hollands, my dad worked there, as I say, for 31 years. My brother worked there. I think my brother worked there before he went to do his army conscription. And my sister worked there for many years in the offices. And then I went to work there for a while, not very long. I think I worked there just for a few short months. And it was the same with Grattan's. My step-grand did the cleaning, and my brother had been a delivery boy. My mum looked after Jimmy Grattan sometimes, who was a baby. I remember us walking up towards the salts, up towards Woodthorpe Hall, pushing Jimmy in the pram. You know, so we were all intermingled, really, with different things that we did. But my dad worked really, really hard at the brickyard. But then when he came home, he had all his animals. And then he did lots of other jobs as well. He used to mend shoes. We used to have...
shoes for the family?
And other people as well, sometimes. I can see him now. I forgot the thing that they put the shoes on.
Yes, it's like a...
I'm afraid the name's gone wrong at the moment.
With the shape of a shoe on the top.
Yeah, that'll probably come to me. But I can remember him with...
Do you want to answer that?
Do you think I have to?
No, pause it. Yeah. Well, I'll just say we had an interruption there. Yes. The phone. But we were talking. You were talking about your dad mending shoes, yes. Not just for the family, but for other people.
As far as I can remember, and he definitely used to cut men's hair, which was always, I thought, very funny. He had his own hairdressing scissors and some sort of shear things, because men had their hair cut very short in those days. And as far as I can remember, everybody who came to have the hair cut by him, he was quite severe. It was like being in the army. And they all went away with a short back and sides, but it was the same style, you know. There was no design to the hair at all, but he cut hair. And that was another way of him just earning a little bit of money for us. Mm. And then, of course, the selling of cigarettes and sweets. And any way that we could earn a little bit of extra money, that's what we did in order to survive. And as a result, I think that considering being born just after the war, when food was scarce, definitely we had ration books for food. I can remember sugar, I think, was a long time before sugar was not on ration. And in a way, we could have sweets whenever we wanted, really. And as a result, I don't even like chocolate now. I think we just were so overfaced with it, and the fact we could have it whenever we wanted, we just left it alone.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, he was always a very, very busy person. And my mum was too.
So when you were going to school,
yes,
you went to All Saints School?
That's right, Totley All Saints School. I always used to think I didn't like school, but looking back now, I think I did. And I had some wonderful friends there. One of my closest friends was called Anne Sewell, and I've often wondered what happened to her, because our names were very similar. I was Anne Russell, with Anne with an E, very important the E, and she was Anne Sewell. And we shared the same birthday, the 19th of August 1941. And we were in the same class at school. And we used to have this little sort of competition between each other, because we would try to think of wearing something that the other person wouldn't know about. And when we got to school, we'd always got the same sort of clothes on. So it was a real coincidence. And then she passed for Hastor's Grammar School for Girls, which I did as well. So for the first year, we stayed friends, because we used to go on the bus together and things. And then she was put in different classes, so we drifted apart. And of course, that first year when I was at High Stores, when I was 11, that's when my mum had the cerebral hemorrhage. And she was taken into the hospital on Christmas Eve, and we didn't think she was going to survive. And she gradually recovered, and then she was sent to a convalescent home at Bridlington, and she didn't come home until about May or June time. So during that time I was sent to live with the Salt family on their farm, which was a double-edged thing really, because I missed my mum tremendously,
yes.
But I loved living on the farm. Because I've always been an outdoor sort of person. My sister was very domesticated. She liked dressmaking, she liked cooking, she liked knitting. I didn't like any of those things. I wanted to be out with my dad, and whatever he was doing, whether it be cleaning the pigs out, I remember us making a path down the side of the cottage, and he'd broken all the original path up to make a new one. And we had to break up all these bits of bricks and things. There's a special name for it, which again has escaped me. And he gave me this hammer to break these bricks up. And I immediately, it was what they call a claw hammer. So at one end it had a pointed end to get nails and screws out and things. And I lifted this hammer up and promptly cut my head open. And all blood was running down. And I remember I rushed into the house and my mum was furious with my dad for giving me such a dangerous tool. But we did. It's just what we did. I mean, how we survived, I don't know. Because he also taught me how to use a saw to cut up logs. We were going to the woods and bring back any trees that had fallen down, and we would then saw them with, and he would stand at one end with the saw and I'd stand at the other. When you first started doing it, it was terrible because the blade just used to flick sideways out of the tree. But eventually he taught me the rhythm, how to do it, and we worked as a team and we'd work our way through the logs. And then we used to have a hatchet to chop the logs into sticks for the fire, because obviously we had a coal fire and a beautiful Yorkshire range. Now, many a time I can remember coming home from school and walking in the house and there's this beautiful smell of food cooking, and I think, oh, I wonder what we're having for tea tonight. And it would be the bucket of pigs full with all the rotting vegetables and bread in, you know. And I used to say, it used to smell lovely.
Would that get boiled up? That
was, yes. Oh, right. It used to go in the oven at the side of the Yorkshire range. And then on the front of the Yorkshire range, on the hearth, which we did have a guard round the fire, but any animals that weren't very well, this is what we used to call our intensive care place, because we used to bring them in. And I can remember seeing, little chickens wrapped in a soft yellow fluffy duster, and particularly the little pigs. Always, anybody who breeds pigs will tell you, there's always the runt of the litter that the mother herself will toss to one side, because she doesn't want to feed that one because its chances of surviving aren't very good. So she herself would knock it to one side. It was quite cruel, but it meant that the other piglets got a good meal. So we would bring this piglet into our house, and it would live for a while on the hearth, you know, where it was nice and warm. And we used to bottle feed it. And, you know, it's the most wonderful feeling in the world to bottle feed a little baby pig. They seem so grateful. And they were like little puppies. You know, you would stroke them and scratch them behind the ear. To my mum, the pigs were pets. And she would go outside with this bucket of pigs full, and she'd knock the side of the bucket with a stick so they'd know that she was coming. And they used to run towards her like little dogs with their ears flapping and all happy, you know, we're going to be fed. And she would stroke them. They loved scratching behind their ears. And so whenever one had to go to be slaughtered, which was always a Sunday morning, that was the only time that the butcher could slaughter our pig. And he had a licence to do it.
Was this Mr. Thompson?
Mr. Thompson, who had the butchers on Tatty Rise. So on a Sunday morning, my dad and several other men, Vernon Mather, who worked at Mr. Thompson's, who had the most beautiful singing voice. He was in the church choir. And he used to come to our house on a Sunday night and sing. Sunday night was always a really, really social night at our house. We used to play card games. And then my sister would sit at the piano, and while she was playing the piano, we all used to sing, but some of us hadn't got very good voices, me in particular, but Vernon would sing on his own, and he really had a beautiful voice. So again, my mum thought a lot about Vernon Mather, and he would come, or Mather, I think, I always say it wrong, his name was Mather, Vernon Mather, and he would come along with other men, and they'd get the pig, they would have to bring it across the river, and then up the path, and across the very narrow bridge, or sometimes across the river, and then they'd take it along the back lane, protesting all the way. It seemed to know what was going to happen. And then we took it to this building on the back lane.
That's the top, the back of what is now Tottenham
House. Yes, I would say where Grattan's is and their garden coming down. And
Grattan's is the straight, very end shop.
So it is, first, yes.
Mr. Glover Road.
That's right. So coming down there, the back of their garden, and then across the back lane, was this building. And it was a three-sided building, so it was open at the front. And we just used to stand there and watch the pig being slaughtered and scrubbed down with boiling water. Then it was hung up and they got the blood for black pudding, and every little bit of that pig was used. Nothing was wasted. And we would leave it with Mr. Thompson for a few days, and then I'd go with my dad. We used to take this rickety old wheelbarrow along the back lane, and he would pile on the pieces of pork that he'd cut, and he used to place the head on top. We used to trundle it back along the back lane. Then we used to put it in great big barrels with salted water. I don't quite know how long we had to steep it for. Then it was hung up. It was hung up in my bedroom. I remember seeing sides of pork hung up, just like you would see them in a butcher's, only they'd be covered in a muslin cloth.
Is this to dry them?
Yes, curing them, I think. But the pork was absolutely beautiful. It was nothing like you get nowadays. It was really tasty. Yeah. Because the pigs had been free range as well, you see. They ate what they wanted to eat, as well as the good food that my mum cooked for them. But they were free to wander all over the field and just eat what they wanted. But you
and the other children just watched the slaughter. That was just part of...
I think we should have been at Sunday school. But we did. Well, you see, the men, they had to get on with the job. And I don't think they thought... My mum would have been horrified, because she used to lock herself in a bedroom and cry her heart out, because to her she was losing a pet. And she would cook the pork for us. She'd do the bacon... And the pork, she never ate any of it herself. Would not eat it. This would be like eating your own pet dog, I expect. And thinking about it now, I probably wouldn't. But as a child, you don't have the same sort of sentiments, I don't think. I don't quite know what we thought. It was all part and parcel of life. Mm. Because the hens that we had, come Christmas... Mr. Salt, who lived at Woodthorpe Farm, would come down, and it was his job. My mum would choose which ones were to be come Christmas dinner, and he would kill them all for us. And I remember the air raid shelter. They were all hung up by the feet in the air raid shelter, and then my mum would pluck them all. That's where she sat, to pluck all the hens. And I would help with that. As children, we had a wonderful life where we could wander freely, which we did, but we also had work to do. And my dad couldn't stand to see anybody being idle, sitting doing nothing. You must not do that. And he was very strict about sitting up at the table, sitting with your shoulders back, not slouching around, being dressed properly. You dare not have a button off your dress. He'd tell you off, and you would have to get it sewn on, or get Mum to sew it on if she was there. They had very kind, gentle parents, and I can't ever remember them telling me off. I do remember once being very, very naughty and expecting my mum to tell me off, and I knew that I was being naughty. I needed a smack or something.
What were you doing?
I was laid on the floor in the room in front of the Yorkshire Range, and we had a sideboard with cupboards and drawers, and I'd got my shoes on and I was kicking at the doors. I was throwing a strop, you know, I was really, something hadn't suited me. And I thought, come on then, you know, tell me off, smite me, do something, because I don't want to do this. I know it's wrong, I know I'm being naughty. And she didn't. Eventually I stopped, but I knew that I shouldn't have been doing it.
That's very advanced, isn't it? That's very enlightened thinking about disciplining children, isn't it? That's what happens now more, isn't it? You know, the relationship between the parents and the children is crucial. You obviously...
You need to have your boundaries, parents, don't you? Yeah. You know, and you can give boundaries without smacking children, I think.
And your testament to that.
I hope so, because I just knew I shan't ever do this again, because I'm not getting the results I expected, you know. And I didn't like myself very much at that point, because I knew that I shouldn't be behaving like this.
That's interesting, you can remember that.
I can remember so many things. That's a lot of stories in my head that I want to write about, including stories about all the different people, the countryside. I loved the countryside. And the things that we did, you know, and school, like you say, school as well. I think probably one of the reasons why I felt I didn't like school was because I didn't like being shut in. I don't like being shut in very much now. I like to be out in the country. I like to be out in my garden doing things. So that restricted my freedom. And I can remember at Totley School, they had a long building that was a temporary building. I believe it was only pulled down a few years ago. And I can remember sitting in there and looking out of the window and looking out over Totley Moss, Totley Moors. And I wanted to be out there. I didn't want to be in the classroom. And I was always being told off for daydreaming. Because again, in my head, I was writing stories as well. I wasn't concentrating. But I must have concentrated because I passed the 11 plus exam. And nobody expected me to. Because I wouldn't apply myself to work, book work or anything. But somehow I must have absorbed it all. And on the day, I passed the exam.
That's probably quite a good place to stop, isn't it, at the moment? We've been talking for quite a while.
I seem to have been talking for
Well, it's been really, while. Really interesting. Thank you ever so much.
There's lots more stories there, but yes, we have been talking, and I hope it's not been boring.
Oh, not at all. It's been fascinating.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.